You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist. Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 54, brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. As always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 8-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, what in the world just happened? It is bizarro world. Nothing is real in the world anymore. How you doing, brother?
Mike, I have a take.
Oh, we got insta-take. I like
insta-take.
It.
Actually, wait. It. Pre-insta-take. It was a hectic week because I was traveling and we had small windows, and then little baby Gus was sick, right? Is he doing better? Is he okay?
Yes, he's all good. Okay. I appreciate you asking.
That's what's important. Okay, I have a take.
Okay.
It's about Carson Wentz and Nick Foles.
Oh, boy.
And the take is this.
Yes.
Carson Wentz is a better quarterback than Nick Foles. All right, now hear me out. This might be a little crazy. The take is this, and again, it's something we've said many, many times. Luck matters so much more than we think it does, and the ball's bouncing a certain way matters so much more than we think it does. We fool you, gentle listener, into thinking that you have to listen to this podcast to understand what's going on, but the reality is clearly...
Football is chaos.
We have no clue what's happening, because what?
13-point dogs.
And here's this one. Okay. What? And Foles didn't even play that well.
Right, Foles was okay.
24 for 34, 270, an interception.
Yeah.
Play calling wasn't even all that different.
Right.
Right? Jeffrey got more targets because Foles was there and Ertz didn't get as many. We'll talk about what that means. Offensive line played better.
Yeah.
I think Wendell Smallwood and Josh Adams looked good. Defense, our line played better. Generated a lot of pressure. I think the big thing is the turnovers. We got to talk about it. The big thing, turnovers. The Eagles in the last two games have generated 6 turnovers. That's not even including like a turnover on downs for a fake punt. 6 turnovers. Over the 9 games previous, they had generated 6 turnovers, Mike. Turnovers in short fields are changing the game for this team, which is something that we've talked about. The Eagles being 32nd in big play rating for defense. Well, now they're generating some big plays. They're making that number better. So turnovers is a huge part of it. But the simple reality was the Rams punt returner muffs the kick. You know, Jared Goff tries to throw a ball on a dead 3rd-and-1, and Corey Graham grabs it. Like, just the stupid stuff finally went Philadelphia's way. And the Eagles, with the longest laundry list of injuries I've ever seen, with Nick Foles again as the starting quarterback, just beat the Los Angeles Rams and kept their playoff hopes alive. It's unconscionable what's currently happening to this team. I'm glad you're listening to the podcast. Please don't stop listening to the podcast. I don't know if Mike's any better, but I just have no clue anymore. I don't even know.
So, Ben, I think the main message here, and the Eagles win 30-23 in a real butt clencher, real close one that I started to get in a sinking feel about. We'll talk about that in a second. But, Ben, I had one very simple request from this Eagles team coming into this game as 13-point dogs. Play tough. That's it.
Right.
Show some pride with your back severely against the wall when everybody is doubting you. do your damnedest to prove guys like me and Ben and others wrong about how this game would go. And that was one of the ingredients of their magical run last year, the ability to shut it all out, tune out the noise, put all adversity aside, and play 60 minutes of tough football. They haven't done it consistently to this point. And coming into this game, you know, with Wentz out just like last year, it felt more important than ever to see that this team had a pulse and that they could rally around each other and they could be that team that we loved so much last year. And regardless of what needs to happen and how improbable it was, this was a team not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. And fans can scoff at that and say it was over. And a lot of people have said it's over. A lot of people have talked about the draft and we need to pivot to the draft and who cares, it's over and all that stuff. But, you know, a lot of us said that the dream of a Super Bowl was over when Wentz went down last year. That Eagles team was able to shut out the noise and perform. This year, not so much. This game, against the odds, against a very good Los Angeles Rams football team that didn't play all that great tonight, we'll talk about that, but a legitimate Super Bowl contender as 13.5-point underdogs. And you know what, Ben? The Philadelphia Eagles fought. They fought damn hard. It leads to a win. I'm very proud of this team.
Yeah, I mean, if we actually discuss the things that Nick Foles has that Carson Wentz doesn't, which exist, I think the number one thing you have to mention is it has never once seemed like a moment is too big for Nick. Nick is
right.
Incredibly, and like, I don't think clutch is the right word. I think just steady is the right word. Nick is just like, and he talks about this all the time. Like, I didn't look at the scoreboard. I didn't look at the, you know, I didn't know the situation. I just came out there trying to play my game. Like, he's just so agnostic of situation. He's so agnostic of like stress and like implications. He just plays his game, and his game isn't great, but man, what was the biggest difference for the Philadelphia Eagles offense, people are like, why was the offense moving? The offense stayed ahead of the sticks, Mike. I mean, again, this was not an offense that was very effective on third down, especially when they got into penalty situations where they were behind the sticks, you know, first and 20, second and 15 a lot. Listen, Mike, this team went 4-for-13 on third downs. It's not great. Rams went 4-for-12. That's good news. 4-for-13, 0-for-1 on fourth down. It's not like this, you know, Foles out there making incredible plays. They just stayed ahead of the sticks. They were able to stay ahead of the sticks so often. And then you generate 3 turnovers. You know, Rams outgained them. Rams had more first downs than they did. 3 turnovers. And that's like, you know, that's what it's going to take to beat good teams, but that's what it takes to beat good teams for Chicago. Chicago had to generate a ton of turnovers on the Rams to beat them, you know? Like, Dallas was out there generating turnovers on the Saints to beat them. Like, when good teams beat other good teams, oftentimes comes down to the turnover battle. So, hey, listen, if this beat-up secondary, Vontae Maddox, Rasul Douglas, Corey freaking Graham, I can't believe I'm saying it, they're going to get the turnover luck and the plays that they need, give some short fields to this offense, it completely changes the dimension of the game for the Eagles.
Let's talk about one of those turnovers, because this sequence of events was crazy. The Rams score a touchdown after a long ball to Josh Reynolds. That puts it at 30-23 with 4 minutes left. The Eagles stall out after an abysmal drive, and you start getting that sinking feeling like, man, here we go. Here we're in quicksand. We get the penalty, the illegal shift, and there was a block in the back, and they're way behind the chains. There's really no way that they're going to make that up. And you're thinking, okay, this is where you really, really start to worry. Because we've been here before. We've blown leads like this year. The feeling this year, for me, was entirely different than the feeling last year when we had a lead. But the Rams muff the punt. And the Eagles get a clear, and I want to be clear on this, a clear recovery of the fumble, get the ball back. Now they're in a position to win this game. The Eagles miss a 53-yard field goal. And it gives the Rams the ball back at their own 43-yard line with no timeouts, 54 seconds left. The Rams move it down to the 18 with 4 seconds left because Gurley doesn't get out of bounds due to Avonte Maddox, who had a pick in this game, being able to get off of his block and make a play. I don't think Gurley expected that. That's why he got tackled in bounds. So one play to win it all, one shot. The Eagles blitz 6 and go picket fence. The villain.
Jim Schwartz called that play call because Mike Groh told him, because Mike Groh listens to the podcast. Jim Schwartz called that because Mike Groh told him. He's like, yo, you know Mike and Ben totally pick on you for the picket fence thing. And he was like, word? Like, I can't believe Mike and Ben would do that. We're bros. And they're like, yeah, like, I know Ben calls you Jimbo, but he is not a fan of the picket fence. And Schwartz like, listen, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to go up 30-13 at the end of the third. Yeah. I'm going to let the Rams score 10. I'm going to let them bring the ball all the way back. I'm going to talk with Doug. Let them bring the ball all the way back to the near red zone. And then I'm going to run cover zero to screw with Mike.
Yep.
Picket fence to screw with Ben.
Yep.
And we go win the game because Avante Maddox had Josh Reynolds clamp all game long. And again, one of the most just, like, you could never have predicted this would be a thing where we were. But I said near red zone. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Mike, I have a take.
Oh, we got another take from Ben. It's a two-take show.
I was told to do more slam stable, I have a takes. So I've got two for this
just
show.
Just don't shut your computer off again. Yep. Then you're fine.
Jared Goff
turns
into a pumpkin in the red zone. Yeah. What the heck was this?
Yeah, Mike? It was weird.
Firstly, I can think of one third down throw he attempted beyond the sticks off the top of my head. Again, 4 for 13, the Rams were on third down.
Yeah.
Constantly throwing behind the sticks, or in front of the sticks, short of the sticks, on third down. And then in the near red zone, again, we always talk about when that space starts to condense, you really need your quarterbacks and your play designs to step up. Listen, he had open wheel routes. He had open bus routes. He had open flag routes. He wasn't hitting them. He was missing them. He was sailing those puppies. There was the end of the first half. They had 4 or 5 shots of the red zone, and Goff's putting it 5 yards out of bounds. He's unwilling to throw it anywhere in your coverage. He's skittish, man.
Yeah.
Near red zone, Eagles getting pressure. I acknowledge that. We knew that Goff's kryptonite was pressure. We've known that since he came out of Cal, and it hasn't changed here in Los Angeles. But in the near red zone, especially when you're getting pressure and there's those tight window throws, man, Goff doesn't trust it. Like that Gurley miss, he put that ball way up high away from the defenders. That Gerald Everett miss, way to the outside away from defenders. Man, he does not like to see color. He missed several.
Yeah.
You know, like touchdown throws that, hey, Carson Wentz could have made, which is the main argument, but, you know, Nick freaking Foles could have made a couple of those, I swear down.
For me, when I went back and looked on the film, the Detroit Lions game, he was bad. He was objectively bad in that game. If the Lions make more plays, if they come up with some more catches on defense, that looks like a very bad game for Goff, but it's because it's the Lions. They win, I believe it was 30-16. Don't quote me on that. Because it's the Lions and they win by 2 scores. No one really pays attention to it. But then in primetime, they play the Bears and Goff plays poorly against the Bears. Right. They shut him down. Then you're thinking, well, it's the Bears defense. That's just, you know, this is 3 weeks in a row now. Two of them against not very good defenses for the most part. Now, I don't want to take too much credit away from the Eagles, but they have not exactly been lights out. They played fantastic tonight for the most part.
Listen, what you said, you know, not necessarily fantastic defenses. There is no reason to start getting like meta about Sean McVay. Sean McVay is clearly a fantastic play caller. Oh, yeah. Sean McVay is clearly, you know, great, you know, young quarterback developer. And he's, you know, got an awesome system. And he does all the stuff that we love to see coaches in the league do. Offensively wise. Now, that being said, there's something to be said for when you have a sub 4-4 player in Brandon Cooks lined up against a 4-6 plus corner in Rasul Douglas and just letting the young man run straight down the field. Right? Like, it's simply, it's like what we said about the Dallas game. It took them 3 quarters to figure out you could just throw it in one-on-one coverage up the field on these Eagles corners. Once they did, they put up 21 points in a quarter, Dallas did.
Right.
St. Louis, or Los Angeles got close to that, but they never really pulled it off. Obviously, they had to start worrying about the clock there near the end of the fourth quarter. But it's shocking to me, like, you know, the amount of dump-offs that Goff was just first read checkdown, first read checkdown, first read checkdown, and the unwillingness to go protect 3 wide receiver to 2 wide receiver route concepts and let your Brandon Cooks or let your Robert Woods go one-on-one down the field on these Eagles corners who have been awful. Mike, 32nd in the league in explosive, or excuse me, 31st in the league in marginal explosiveness on defense. Right. Second worst in giving up explosive plays, pass plays on defense. What? Just go. Let him fly. You got great talent, and Goff is a decent deep ball thrower. I think he's got a great 9 ball.
I mean, you saw the tracking issues that the Eagles quarterbacks had. They were in good coverage, and the ball just drops in there, and they lose themselves. Like, I don't trust those guys to make a play on a deep ball like that.
Yeah, so that's a situation where you just expect
more shots.
Yeah, you expect more shots. It's a situation of, you know, like one of the reasons we always laud Belichick as a defensive play caller. Belichick has always been oriented his teams defensively on just take away whatever the opponent's team does really, really well. And Philadelphia was able to take away what the Rams did really, really well. I'm not going to take that away from them in terms of they just didn't bite on play action. And they just let everything happen in front of them. They played a ton of, on running downs, Mike, zero techniques. Fletcher Cox, Trayvon Hester, Haloti Ngata at zero technique. And a lot of that, I think, was to combat wide zone ideas by getting up in the A gap and you know, you're not teeing off where you're going to be bringing pressure from. You could slant either direction, but regardless, that's a divergence. We laud Belichick because his team's takeaway with the opposing team does well. As an offensive play caller, attack what the defense does poorly. And Philadelphia get a one-on-one matchup on the outside and throw against it as often as you want. The Eagles are playing their fourth and their fifth string outside corners.
Yeah.
The curls, the comebacks. I mean, Gerald Everett had a freaking career game because of how much Jared Goff was checking down, right? They don't throw to the tight ends in this system. Like, what are you talking about? So I don't know what the funk is exactly for Los Angeles. I think it's mostly just Goff being very first read check down heavy. But dude, I would have just protected and let him shoot.
Yeah.
And you just didn't really see them do that nearly as much as I would have expected. Maybe we'll go back to the tape. We'll see those plays. We'll see Rasul Douglas in fantastic coverage. Man, I'd love that. That'd be awesome. But to me, I don't think that's what happened.
Yeah, I didn't see the 2 and 3 man routes with the max protection. The things that I figured I would see against this heavy cover 1, cover 3 defense in space, getting those 2 and 3 routes deep into the secondary and just kind of picking them apart and buying Goff maybe some extra time because Fletcher Cox was dominating the interior of that offensive line. Michael Bennett was doing a heck of a job. Brandon Graham was getting a push. They were very, very good. And then at the end, you started to see him wear it down. I remember I put on Twitter, I'm like, yo, Cox is gassed. He needs a breather. He comes out the next play. They get another chunk gain. He comes back in. That's when they get the huge gain to Reynolds. So I was like, man, this pass rush is going to start wearing down, and this is when it starts to get ugly. Turns out everything is totally fine. But look, we have to talk about this. We got to talk about Nick Foles a little in depth here the day that he had. He started out solid. Yeah. Started out real solid. You could say that he missed Ertz in the end zone. Maybe you could say that Ertz is supposed to run that more like a flat 7, like a corner route. But to me, he runs a deep out, and they're not on the same page. So maybe that's the downside you get having a new quarterback in there. Chemistry thing is what it is. So that was one I thought he missed. We'll see. But then you look at what he did with Alshon Jeffrey. Alshon Jeffrey beat Aqib Talib early.
7 out of 8 targets, Mike. 7 out of 8 targets on the side of Aqib Talib, man. Michael Crabtree's father is Aqib Talib. His grandfather is Alshon Jeffrey.
Exactly. So, yeah, he beats Aqib immediately on a release. Nice little bucket throw by Foles. And then he has him on a couple more. And he had a nice faith throw where Jeffrey basically just stopped on a dig. And Jeffrey went up and got it. And then, Ben, the hilarious one. Okay, so we'll talk about his overall game, and he had an interception in this game, but this one was amazing to me. He rolls out to his right. He sees Nelson Agholor and Alshon Jeffrey all by themselves.
What was that, man?
The Rams secondary played very, very, very poorly in the first half, and that was part of it. So I thought Foles was a little late to that throw, because if you have two guys that are like 15 yards behind the defense, something went wrong in that secondary, and Foles didn't identify it right away. I know he dropped his eyes to move at one point, was looking at an underneath route, but he ends up loading up that Nick Foles can and takes a shot, which was ballsy. I'm going to give him credits for that. He knew he was going to take a shot. Throws a prayer up there. Alshon Jeffrey goes and gets it for the reception. But overall, again, 24 for 31, 270. Didn't throw a touchdown, but had several drives that went into scoring territory, and then got, you know, Wendell Smallwood had 2 touchdowns. What is that about? Is he a feature back now? No, he's not. But oh my God.
Oh my God. Listen, what like Nick Foles was playing well, and we were dealing with that. And then within the span of like 5 seconds, Wendell Smallwood made good plays. Corey Graham made a good play, and Helodian Otta made a good play.
Right.
And I was just like, okay.
How do I process? This is a lot to take on.
Yeah, I was like, so pretty much Gro told Doug, and probably the whole roster, is like, listen, so Ben has been talking a lot of smack. You guys know Ben. Kiss this whole live show. You guys are big fans, obviously. Yeah. So Ben has been talking tons of smack on the podcast about you, Wendell. So we're going to give you whatever it was, like 12 touches. We'd like for you to score on, say, like 2 or 3 of them. How's that sound? How does a 4.8 yards per carry and 2 touchdowns sound?
Yeah.
Like, oh, like Ben's been defensible of the Zach Ertz target street thing. So we're going to give Ertz only 7 targets, which actually, like, we should talk about this. You know how Ertz was targeted way less than Alshon Jeffrey in this game, right?
Right.
Yeah, Ertz had 7 targets, Alshon had 8.
Yeah, I know.
Now, what I will say is, Alshon caught all 8 of his for 160 yards.
Right.
Which is, I'm doing the math. That's good. That's really good. Zach Ertz, obviously, 3 catches for 22 yards. Now, let's talk about this. If you want to make a comparison between the Dallas game and the Rams game, well, I'm here to tell you the Cowboys have much, much, much better corners than the Rams do. And so obviously you're in a situation where you want to be corning to the tight end. Now, once Byron Jones starts coming over Zach Ertz, which one handsome Mike Kiss profiled for Bleeding Green Nation, it's upgraded on the site. Well, then you'd like to see them move away from Ertz and something that we talked about.
Correct.
And hey, look at this. Nick Foles comes in and the target distribution is different. What I will say is, okay, so they're targeting Ertz too much and they're targeting Jeffrey too little with Carson's in. They had a less productive passing attack to get 270 yards, an interception, no touchdowns, than they usually do. I think that's very important to note that the passing attack in general was not as good. Just like from a raw production standpoint. Now, I'm very excited to go back to the film, Mike, because we've got to talk about, you know, what in the designs were different that were giving Alshon more targets.
Yeah.
To me, it would be, well, we just made Alshon number one in the progression more often. We made, you know, we called plays or by alignment and put him in number one in the progression more often because Foles clearly has a better rapport with that with Alshon as compared to the rapport between Wentz and Ertz.
And despite the interception that Aqib had, Aqib looked like, and he's coming back from an injury, Aqib looked bad in the first half. Aqib looked bad in the first half. That was a mismatch that you want to exploit.
I cannot tell you what he, LaMarcus Joyner, and Marcus Peters were doing on the Aguilar Alshon punt, the center fielder ridiculous. Like, I could not possibly explain that to you. No, I have no idea what was going on there. But what I know about the target distribution is this. Here are two things that I know. Number one, Nick Foles clearly likes throwing to Alshon Jeffrey, and it works well for him. Carson Wentz clearly likes throwing to Zach Ertz, and it works well for him, and I'm not going to complain about either one, number one. Number two, Alshon clearly wanted to make a statement with his targets. You know what I mean? Like, Alshon was clearly playing at a very high and aggressive level, making fantastic catches. Foles was asking a lot out of him to catch some jump balls and catch some balls outside of the radius, and Alshon responded in a big way. And so, like, you know, Alshon, this is his highest output since week 7, since week 8, whatever. Good. He's going to continue to get the football now. Alshon's also going to be on the team next year. Carson's going to be on the team next year. They're going to continue to get Alshon the football. You know what I mean? Like, this is like another, this is like, all right, is Nick Foles better than Carson Wentz? No. Well, he had a pretty good game today. Well, it's a sample size thing. He had one good game, and he's had good games in the past. He had bad games in the past. You have to be able to calibrate sample size. Jeffrey fell asleep target-wise, for a 4 or 5 game stretch.
Yeah.
But over his 2 years here in Philadelphia, he's been a productive receiver who has very frequently led the team in targets, I believe. I might be wrong, but he has gotten a healthy amount of targets. I'm sure it's wide receiver one caliber-esque. So yeah, he had a quieter 5 game stretch. Well, Foles has kind of reminded us, because of his affinity with Jeffrey, his chemistry with Jeffrey, what Jeffrey can do when Jeffrey is that feature receiver. Philadelphia's also got Mousefi with Aguilar and with Golden Tate, but I don't think that, like, you know, oh, now that Foles is in, Jeffrey's going to start getting targets, and then it's going to, like, go back to Jeffrey getting 4 targets a game, or that Jeffrey will only get targets when it's Foles, or that the game plan was even changed that much so that Jeffrey would get targets. It's just simply the reality of where Foles likes to put the football. He's throwing trust routes to Jeffrey, where Wentz would be throwing trust routes to Ertz, and both have been successful.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Okay, so let's put a grade on it. A through F, what do you grade Nick Foles' performance for this game?
What would be average on the bell curve? A B? Like a B. You know what I mean? B minus. I mean, interception was bad. Keeps sleep was squatting on it. Missed a few throws. I mean, he got hit he hit Alshon on a couple throws where Alshon just went out and saved it for him. He was frequently throwing short of the sticks, which was play calling. Didn't want it to be sending him beyond the 6 on third down. He was frequently throwing short of 6 on third down. But, and this is the key thing I kind of talked about, what does Foles have that Carson doesn't? Foles is not pushing to make crazy plays the way that Carson does.
Right.
Foles plays a calmer game right now than Carson Wentz. And for the intents and purposes of this game, in which Philadelphia got 3 turnovers, right? In which Philadelphia's defense stepped up in a way we haven't seen them play, that calm, steadying hand led them to a win. It's not dissimilar, in my opinion, to my experience of game 1 against Atlanta. Way back week 1. Eagles win that game 18-12, right? Again, super, super low passing output right now. Like, the 2 of the 3 lowest passing outputs for the Eagles this year have been the Atlanta game and then this game. And the only other low one was the New Orleans Saints game, right? Just generally, just like, you know, a rather anemic, slow passing game.
I did think it was interesting, especially on the drive where they got the 3rd and 3, where they get 2 yards up the middle, and then the fourth and one where they go with Adams again, and they don't get it, the turnover on downs there, that they took the ball out of Foles' hands, and the third and eight when they were up 2 scores, that they went with a run to Sproles, they took it out of his hands again. And it was just something that we've seen all season. I asked them before that play, please be aggressive. Please be aggressive on third and eight in this situation. This Rams offense can score on you, and this defense is going to gas out. And that's what's kind of started to happen. They took it out of his hands. I thought it could have been a better day for Foles if they had trusted him more. But then at the same time, after that, he threw one to Ertz high and away, and that one nearly got picked too. So you're like, okay, well, maybe not.
Oh, man. That near pick with about like 4 minutes left. Yeah, that second and 17 throw or whatever it was. Oh, my goodness, man. I pooped a little bit. I was just like, I was so freaking scared. Yeah. I just like, you felt it coming. I was so mad that they made me believe they were going to win this game. And then they tried to give it away again with a scoreless fourth quarter where they gave them up 10 points. They were about to give up 17. But oh, I was furious. Yep. But no, it didn't come to be. And man, shout out to the Rams punt returner who muffed that thing. Thank goodness.
Oh, yeah.
But this is, I don't know about you. To me, this is the most interesting game to look back on all 22 wise the Eagles season. I mean,
oh yeah.
How did this secondary survive?
Yeah,
with the players that they had, with the yardage they've given up to much worse passing attacks, and number two, what was, if anything, different beyond execution for the offense? And corollary to that, what does improved execution across the board, offensive line, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, tell us about Nick Foles? Like, QB wins, ? Like, you know what I mean? Like, obviously, right. Like, it's not really a thing, but, like, you wonder, I mean, you don't really wonder why this team believed they could win with Nick Foles. They did it for 3 games straight in the playoffs when they weren't supposed to. Yeah. So, there was evidence to it. Like, all the data pointed to it. It seems so improbable every single time, and this goes back to what I said in the beginning of the show, like, it's still unbelievable. Like, this is just like, we don't know what to tell you. But this is fascinating to go back and look. This is going to be, it's going to be incredible. And it's going to be huge for understanding what to expect against Houston. And now a situation, Mike, where if the Eagles beat Houston at home, Houston's been good, but recently lost. And Houston will be coming off of a longer week. We assume the Vikings beat the Lions, which they're doing, I believe, on the road. But we assume the Vikings beat the Lions, which they should. The Eagles will be half a game back against a Washington Redskins team led by Josh Johnson.
Right.
A game they should win. The Vikings will be playing a Week 17 game against the Bears, in a game in which, because the Eagles beat the Rams,
the Bears have to play the starters.
The Bears just may play their starters,
right,
looking to go get themselves a round one bye. And right. So it's an incredible point where you could, this Rams win could end up bringing Philadelphia to a point where Week 17, they're looking for a little bit of help, but it's a little bit of realistic help to potentially make the sixth seed wild card. And there's other situations that are a part of that as well. There's, a two-loss Seattle team, and Philadelphia winning out would send Philadelphia to the playoffs because Seattle would fall out of the wild card. But to me, that's not super likely. Seattle have to lose to Arizona, which I don't anticipate them doing.
They just lost to San Francisco, and I was watching that San Francisco game, and I was going, man, I sure hope the Eagles come out and play like the 49ers did tonight, and they ended up with a W. It was wild. I doubt against the Cardinals.
Remind me, does Kyle Shanahan coach the Cardinals?
Believe he does not.
Yeah, it's Steve Wilkes who does that. So anyway, a Carolina team that could potentially beat the Saints a couple times could change the tiebreakers. There's also if the Cowboys decide to lay another magnificent stinker against the Bucks,
which was the Giants game.
listen, I was like, obviously this Rams game is kind of distracted the point here, but if the Cowboys losing that game made me so angry, I was furious.
Yeah.
Because, Mike, nothing will be said about this, nothing will be mentioned about this, no one will get to this, but we sat here after that game and we said, everybody is all about it. They're just drinking the Cowboys juice, and this team is bad. It's just, there was a bad team who beat the Eagles. And then they come out and absolutely embarrass themselves against the Colts because they're not a good football team. And you won't hear anything like, oh, maybe the Cowboys aren't legit. Nope, we'll still talk ourselves into the Cowboys if and when they win the division. They'll come out against the Buccaneers. They'll beat them 13-6, and we'll all be about it again. But still, this is a clearly bad team, just like the Eagles are clearly a bad team. But hey, now that Nick Foles is here, who the heck knows what's going to happen?
And what we said about the Cowboys was, we know what the offense is. The offense is bad. We know what the defense is. The defense has been playing very good. Offensive play is stickier than defensive play. And that's what happened to the Cowboys today against the Colts, just getting manhandled by the Colts. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see how this playoff picture unfolds. We're going to cover all of that. The reason I think the Eagles pulled off this upset today, Ben, and we'll get to three words here. It was because, as Ridgewood points out, at @Teddy_Ridgewood, Doug wore glasses. That's exactly why.
Okay, before we rip all the way through three words.
Yeah.
Game ball. You got to give one out.
Avonte Maddox.
All right, Avonte Maddox?
Yeah, that's easy.
Convince me. Not that I need any convincing. I mean, dude, I literally, like, screw me. I wrote about Avonte Maddox, and I was like, before the season, I was like, man, I don't think he's ready to be the slot corner. And so Mike Groh went to Avonte, listener to the podcast, Mike Groh, went to Avonte and said, dude, this is my new favorite joke. This is hysterical.
Yeah.
Went to Avonte and said, yo, because Ben doesn't think it'd be a slot corner, I talked to Jimbo, and we're just going to play you literally everywhere on the freaking field all of the time, and you just will never stop making good plays forever. Yeah. Shout out to Avonte Maddox.
Outside corner now, after being safety and being trained as a nickel corner, Avonte Maddox with the big pick on there with the coverage at the end of the game. Dude balled out and had the tackle that kept Gurley in bounds. That's my case for him. That's three big plays right there.
Dude,
three big moments.
I mean, obviously Gurley should have gone out of bounds, but Gurley cuts that back in bounds, and not a lot of people, like, Gurley doesn't break a ton of tackles, but not a lot of small fourth round 5'10" rookies tackle Todd Gurley at that moment, and Maddox hit him. Maddox put it on him. Dude, Fletcher Cox gets carted off.
Yeah.
Probably gets shot up a little bit. Comes back and just, I mean, did Balls. You see that clip of him taking John Sullivan?
Yes.
And like straight Darth Vader choke slamming him up into the air, feet off the ground, just displanted and displaced him. And just unbelievable amount of interior pressure. I mean, it was the textbook, it was how you draw up beating Jared Goff, and him, Michael Bennett, had fantastic games in order to do so.
Yeah.
It's dude. I mean, Michael Bennett obviously, but Fletcher Cox in a game where, you know, kind of coming in with that context of like, oh, you know, like I don't get like the same amount of love and respect that Aaron Donald does. Well, Cox had a bigger game than Donald without question in this game. Donald's a better player. Again, sample size. It's like a Nick Foles, Carson Wentz thing, but Cox had a huge one. So. That's my game ball. You can roll three words.
So a couple here. We got to get to some of what people are saying about Nick Foles. Caden Lai at KLEIX85 says Foles takes galore. That's correct. That's what we're facing. I'm going to be on 97.5 in the morning probably talking about it. I'll get asked about it. And you're going to hear my take on there,
Mike,
as well.
Mike, defend us.
Nice little plug for 97.5. Alex Urim at FlexiLexi40 says, quarterback controversy. Look, and I tweeted this out, no matter what happens with Foles, unless it's just this unreal magical run Super Bowl thing again, in that case, I don't care. I could die tomorrow. But let's just say Foles plays really well over the life of this season and make the playoffs. They don't make the playoffs. Maybe they get into a playoff game. Whatever. Whatever happens. Foles can play really well. The season ends. The quarterback for this franchise is Carson Wentz. Anything else that you hear is noise. It's a complete media construction. It's not created by the organization. I guarantee you that.
Can you imagine, like, if somebody sat you down on December 10th, 2017, before the Rams game last year and said, you know, Carson, like, you know, MVP conversation right now?
Right.
And you were like, yeah. Like, 365 days from right now.
Yeah.
You'll be talking, or 371. You'll be talking about potentially calling Nick Foles the franchise quarterback over him.
Right.
I'm here to tell you that even if it's the right call for Nick Foles, it won't be made, because Lurie, Doug, and Howie, when they made their choice to go get their franchise quarterback, traded up everything to go get Carson Wentz. The eggs are in that basket.
Yeah.
Then they're going to remain there. Like, you know, yeah, Foles wins a second Super Bowl. Let's talk about it. But barring that, the eggs are in that basket, and that's what they're going to remain. Every good game that Foles puts out is an opportunity to trade him. That's all it is. I mean, at this point, I'd be texting Doug Marone and be like, hey, let's schedule golf for every freaking weekend for the next 10 months while I convince you to send me an exorbitant amount of picks that you should not send me for Nick Foles. I wouldn't phrase the text like that. That wouldn't work. But I'm so happy you said quarterback controversy because Patrick at PMC1423, friend of the podcast,
Patrick,
his three words is quarterback controversy. And then it's the gif of Batman slapping Robin a bunch of times. So clearly he agrees with us in the sense that there is not a quarterback controversy.
Yeah, the other one, Anthony A. at Ayers, or Ayers 0807, says Foles the sequel. Look, man, if it happens once, it's Joe Flacco. If it happens twice, we'll have a conversation. That's where I'm at. Remember Joe Flacco going 13 touchdowns, zero interceptions in the playoffs, having that crazy fluke win against the Denver Broncos, going to win a Super Bowl?
Been trash since. Sunset Shaz, friend of the podcast. Nick Foles is the second most efficient quarterback in exclusively playoff history, which is just like, Nick Foles' career is going to be something I have to explain to my kids like multiple times. And they'll be like, really? And I'll be like, yeah, that dude, that weird-looking Napoleon Dynamite, they probably don't get that reference. Dude. That guy right there, second most effective quarterback. They're like, but we don't know who he is. I'll be like, that's why this is funny.
Yeah.
I had from, where was it? Tom Shaddle at T Shaddle says Sean McVay's face, which, man, after that muff, when they locked in on McVay and his eyes were wide as dinner plates, dude, 2017 Coach of the Year, robbed it from Doug Peterson. He will never, ever beat Doug Peterson in his career. Boom. Third take of the podcast. McVay will go oh and whatever against Doug Peterson in his career. That's my take.
There are a lot of confused people.
Dude, I've seen seven Big D Knicks. I've seen seven. Just everywhere.
Yeah, one from the account, from App Leading Green.
From the official account, right? That's a good point. And then the last one I wanted to find, because it made me laugh oh so hard, Chris Carbaugh at DA_CTrain, the Smallwood game.
Mm.
Which, it's the sneaky narrative, Mike. It's not Nick Foles. It's not the change of Nick Foles. No, it was the change of feature back to Wendell Smallwood. That's how the Eagles saved their season. Last year, we know it was Nick Foles' year. Wendell Smallwood, 10 touchdowns in the playoffs, 3 in the Super Bowl. Eagles beat the Chiefs by running Wendell Smallwood everywhere. Shout out Wendell Smallwood.
Pay the man now.
As we all listen, thank goodness Doug ran him on that 2nd and 11 in the red zone against the Cowboys. Because if he hadn't, Smallwood wouldn't have been ready to win this game. Wendell Smallwood, ladies and gentlemen. MVP, all the game balls. I hate this game so much. This game is literally the worst thing in the world.
Because we have to make sense of it, and football is chaos. Eagles win 30-23, beat the Rams after being 13.5-point dogs. I think that's going to do it for us here. Ben, would you like to say goodbye to the gentle listeners?
Gentle listeners, I can't believe we are still here talking about the season. After everything that's happened, the Eagles are 7-7 with 2 games left. And after we told you unequivocally that the season rested on the Cowboys game a week ago, here we are selling you on Nick Foles and the LA Rams beating Philadelphia Eagles going up against the Houston Texans at the Link in week 16. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Kiss and Solak show here on BGN Radio. We do appreciate you swinging by. I've been Benjamin Solak on Twitter, at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-E-K. He's been Michael Kist on Twitter, at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. The second this All 22 drops, which we should expect at some point on Monday, Mike, or on Tuesday.
You caught me.
Okay. Yeah. Whenever, yeah, I always do. Whenever the All 22 drops, we're going to get the review out for you guys as soon as we can, simply because, again, going back through the film on this game is going to be fascinating. In the meantime, Mike, 580 ratings right now on iTunes, 572 of which our 5-star ratings, which is literally like 98 point something rating. Yeah. It's incredible. So we're very, very thankful for that. Listen, the season is
nothing,
coming to an end.
Hold on, Ben. Nothing in America, in this economy, has that type of approval
economy,
rating.
Mike and I's new thing is in this economy. Anyway, yeah. There's 580 ratings, which is absolutely stellar. There's 227 reviews, which is crazy. We have gotten some hysterical reviews recently. We'll be excited to read those on the podcast, probably on a less busy one. So go ahead and throw a couple more on there while you can. If we got that up to 600 ratings, that'd be incredible. Like we said on a previous podcast. We are nearing the top 150 podcasts right now for all of sports in iTunes, which is bananas. So your ratings and reviews do help us there. Please go ahead and leave those, and always talk to us on Twitter. We got a lot to talk about for this game. Should be a really fun week. You will catch us for the rest of the week, all 22 review show, and then a very important, all of a sudden, Houston Texans preview shows, offense and defense. It's the usual week here at the Kissin' Solak Show. We will catch you later.
We all we got. We all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.